Oh, look at this. Welcome back to the second hour of the Tobler Show. Leah warned me she was going to be playing some bumper music to get me nostalgic. I'm liking that. Wow. Michael Jackson. ABC. Welcome back to the program. In just a few minutes, we're going to be talking with Eric Robert about one of the most serious threats, I think, to this nation's not only economic, of course, security, but national security, and that is inflation, the Fed policy, where it's leading us to. I mean, it's almost as though we're in a rock in a hard spot, and we'll be talking with Eric about historical context and sort of some basics of economic theory and why we're here. Of course, he holds forth with Bob Stockdale on the Money here on News Talk STL every week as well. So you won't want to miss that. And later on, Virginia Cruda this hour. And we're going to cover the Ukraine situation. What's the truth? Where is it headed? Is it just a little uptick temporarily for the Ukrainians? Or are they truly turning the tide? And what's happening with Putin? Some reports out of Russia that Putin's inner circle even is turning sour on him. But we don't know what to believe anymore. It could be Russian disinformation. Pray tell. I don't know if you saw this, but as we head into this midterm election season, the various issues that are going to make decisions for people or inform them as to when they're making their decisions, it's fascinating to watch. This midterm may be different than some others. Of course, midterms tend to be base elections more than the general election that involves a presidential year. At least that's what the experts have said and what history seems to indicate. But also, on the other hand, it tends to be favorable, all other things being equal, for the party that is out of power. And certainly the GOP is out of power at all levels, both in the Oval Office, the House, and the Senate. But this year, with the Dobbs decision, some have said that maybe that's different. The generic polls have flipped in the last month or two, showing that, now this was pre-Labor Day polling, showing that the generic ballot would be in generally in favor of the Democrat over the Republican. However, that's a broad brushstroke. That's a national number. It doesn't really reflect what's going on in any particular district. But one of the issues that I was curious about, maybe you were too, was student loan forgiveness announced by the president a few weeks ago. The details haven't been worked out. Many have said, wow, is that buying votes from the base, those who, the elites who are have college education and therefore more likely to have loans at a higher rate than those the everyday Americans, those forgotten Americans, the Trump voters, if you will. You, me, and others who have we're not buying this Northeast and this West Coast elite stuff. We're a flyover country. We work for a living. We don't tell other people how to work for a living, what to charge and how to make what they make and regulate others for a living. We actually do something and make a difference. That group of people, the Mike Rowe folks, if you will, I think have some different thoughts. Trafalgar came out with a poll, and this poll was from earlier this month. It was for the, September 2nd through the 5th. So, a couple weeks old now. About 1,100 respondents, likely general election voters, as opposed to some of the polls you have to watch out for if they say that it's registered voters. That's a different story. And that may not reflect what actually happens at the ballot box. Being registered is one thing, casting a ballot's another. Although the Democrats have successfully, even before pandemic, and then of course, really driven forward by pandemic, made it into an election season as far as casting votes, not election day, which really troubles me. I would like to see elections on either Saturday or Sunday or both. Rather than a Tuesday. That way there's no excuses for people having to work. I mean, but certainly one day or another you could get out and work or make it Monday and Tuesday. I don't care. But this 2, 3, 4 weeks, 3 months of voting doesn't make sense to me. Anyway, but I digress. The margin of error was about 3% in this poll. And the single question was, are you more or less likely to vote for a political candidate who supports President Biden's student loan forgiveness plan? So is the plan more or less likely to make you vote for the candidate in your district or, let's say, a senator in your state? Much less likely. So a negative impact, that announcement, turned out to be 49% of respondents. This is all comers. They said they were much less likely, and another 7% were somewhat less likely. whereas only 31% were more likely to vote for that candidate if they supported the Biden loan forgiveness. So that's about a 56 to 44% spread if you look at everyone. And it seems to be more entrenched among the GOP. When Republicans, self-described Republicans were asked that, it was 81% much less likely, somewhat less likely. In other words, it would have a negative impact on their vote for that candidate. You were talking about 88%. Among Democrats, however, not quite as entrenched. Much more likely or somewhat more likely to vote for a candidate. You'd expect a Democrat to be in favor of that. Came out to about 88%. So the bottom line, though, is, and here's the important number, independents, those with no party affiliation, 54% said that that decision had a negative impact on their likelihood of voting for a candidate who supported it, and another 10% somewhat less likely. So if you just took the less likelies all told, it was 65%, almost two-thirds of respondents in the independent category said that that had a negative impact on their vote. That's interesting. I wouldn't have predicted it to be that strong. I would have thought that there were so many people that either owe debt or maybe their parents of people who owe debt, that this would have been actually driving some votes, buying votes. So it appears as though if the likely voter polling results in the Trafalgar poll hold forth, it appears as though, in fact, it may not be a good thing and it may actually hurt the president. Certainly, it'll help him among his base. And to the extent that this is a base election, things may be different. Hopefully, those independent voters will get out there. What is the thought in your household around the table at the water cooler, over the horseshoes game, whatever, watching the football game? Has it come up? What has been the sentiment among folks that are in your network? 314-912-1019. I'd be interested in knowing, because I think it's a huge mistake. It's going to be an inflationary thing, $600 billion at least. And some estimates have said, with all of the other little frills and the deferments and the maximum payment, I think is going to be changed from 10% of your income to 5%. This is going to amount to as much as $1 trillion. And someone has to pay that bill. I liked what one party said, that they don't have debt because they didn't go to college. And they said, well, I guess now I have student debt because they're going to be paying for it. We're all going to be paying for it. When we have now $31 trillion in present debt for this country, and with unfunded liabilities, meaning Medicare and Social Security, well over $100 trillion. It is so much that if you look at it graphically, have you ever seen that graphic, Leah? If you just take like a palette of $100 bills, and that's, I don't know what it equals, but when you take the current debt and then you put like a crane, they do this pictorial. I'll have to find it and put it on the page, the show page. Yeah. A pictorial with, it looks like $100 trillion looks like, skyscrapers, like the Twin Towers in New York, along with other skyscrapers. It looks like a New York streetscape. And a little crane, but it's a big construction crane. But the skyscrapers of piles of $100 bills to equal $100 trillion look like New York City skyline. It's amazing. Wow. I don't know how we're ever going to pay that back. But thank you very much, Leah, for funding my Social Security and Medicare when I get there to that age. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Am I welcome for that?
Sure. Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. 314-912-1019 if you want to join the program. Let's play a little sound. I want to play a little Karine Jean-Pierre sound. And where was that? I think that was the other day. Where is my sheet? Number 7, 16-7. Oh. This is Karine Jean-Pierre.
Look, the question that the president was asked about the day before yesterday, which shows more progress, that data, the CPI data, which is what he was speaking to, shows more progress in bringing global inflation down in the U.S. economy. Overall, prices have been essentially flat in our country these last 2 months. That is welcome news for American families.
Prices have been essentially flat. Not when eggs are up 30%, bread up more, Fuel is up, although it moderated in the last month. So they take a month-over-month number of 0.1% overall, which is moderated by the volatile fuel prices, which dropped month-to-month, and they do the smoke and mirrors calculation that things are moderating. Yeah, things are moderating. The core price in index, though, is up month-to-month and is not showing much sign at all of slowing down. And if it is, it's not near the slowdown that we need to see. And in fact, the only way it seems to get it to slow down is to curb our appetite for spending. And yet the number came out later in the week that consumer spending was up again. Where's that money coming from? I think it's from the American Rescue Plan and all of the CARES 1 and CARES 2 and the other dollops of money that people got through the pandemic. And let's not kid ourselves. That wasn't just Joe Biden. That was a clumsily and heavy-handed handout, just a blanket handout of money from D.C. A lot of folks who were continued working got that money. They worked remote, continued getting a paycheck, but yet they were getting just the deposits in their, getting the checks in the mail. Are we still seeing the fallout from that? Is that still, people taking now into that money that was put into savings and they were, they're now spending that? I don't know. But I'm not sure that we've seen the curbing, the peaking of the inflation that we need to. Certainly the Fed is, the rumbling is that the Fed was going to raise prices. The Fed funds rate, 0.75%, and maybe as much as 1%, which I think may be unprecedented. We'll see what Eric Roberts has to say when we check with him in just a few minutes. But make no bones about it. This is going to be, I think, the top election issue, and I don't see it changing dramatically before November. Hopefully, Americans will realize that the spending policies, the profligate spending policies, thinking that modern monetary theory, just letting money work, just printing money can be the answer to these problems. Not the case. Not the case at all. I'm Randy Tobler. Let's step aside and take a little break. And then when we come back, we'll be talking to Eric Robert. Oh, no, my timing's off. No, it's not time yet for a break, is it?
You have a caller, too.
No. The other, I wanted to talk, too. I wanted to get it out there in case you're just joining us. There's an important event coming up. Let's make sure that we talk about that, Leah, before we join Eric. And that is the barbecue. It put on by the St. Louis Young Republicans in conjunction with News Talk STL. We're proud to present the Freedom Fest Barbecue. That's the second annual one. That'll be out at Graboy Bluffs Drive in Fenton on October 9th, Sunday, October 9th, from 11 to 2. Lots of special guests and speakers. You all know them. Attorney General Eric Schmidt, of course, who is vying for the retiring Roy Blunt Senate seat. Congresswoman Ann Wagner, Senator Bill Eigel, Holly Jones, Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft will be there as well, and it'll be fantastic. We have a caller. Is old Rick on the line?
This is Joe.
Oh, we got Joe. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Hey, Dr. Onger, long-time fan.
Thank you.
All right. Good. Yeah, no,
yeah what's on your mind?
I'll tell you, social media keeps canceling me because I talk about the jab, the spike-creating jab, and how dangerous it is, and I don't understand why we can't talk about it. They keep canceling the numbers that are coming out for negative reactions on the government-sponsored bears for children is absolutely terrible, and I don't understand why social media feels they can't talk about it. And I guess, Doctor, the other thing is what really upsets me is if the local media would just cover some of this and how terrible the reactions are for some of these kids, people would stop giving it to their kids. But our local media gets so much money from the pharmaceutical industry through advertisements that they won't even cover these stories about the terrible reactions children are having to this horrific jab.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm not as enthusiastic about the vaccine for young people as I am about for certain groups of older people, especially now that there's a newer engineered to be more specific for the Omicron vaccine for older people that are at risk, you know, folks that have diabetes, folks that have chronic heart conditions. But the data on young people was not vetted as carefully as it should have been. I know, Marty Macri and others have been on my page that for young people, especially, and young men in general, I'm just not sure that the risk benefit is there at all. I agree with you. And boy, but you're right. If you cover it on social media, if you talk about it, you're going to be canceled. And that's a real problem. There's no doubt about it.
I would love to have a discussion with you because I think you're incorrect. I don't think that having your own cells create a spike protein is good for any age group. And I think having your own cells telling your own cells to create spike protein is healthy for anybody. And I think that's
What do you think your cells do when you're infected with a virus? It creates a virus with a spike protein.
Right. I don't argue that. But what I'm trying to tell you is telling your own body through mRNA, because your body doesn't recognize that that's a foreign substance in your body, the mRNA. It thinks that it is your body telling it to create a spike protein. So you're telling healthy cells, you're voluntarily telling healthy cells to create a spike protein. I think that is a terrible idea. I think it's just a terrible idea. And you're infecting yourself basically with the COVID. And it's not the same as any other.
No, you're not infecting your cells with COVID. No, I beg to differ with you. You're not infecting. You're giving your cellular machinery a message, just like your virus gives your cellular machinery a virus.
No, that's not true.
Yes, yes.
It is true. We can agree. Well, wait a minute. What does mRNA tell your cells to do? The mRNA vaccine, what does it tell your cells to do?
It does the same thing that viral RNA does, which is tells your cells to manufacture virus particles, which include a spike protein. I mean, so you're getting essentially a sub message that's exactly identical. Well, it's nearly identical to the same message of that component of the virus when you have a viral infection. Right. There's no doubt about that. I mean, you can't argue that.
You're infecting your body.
No, you're not infecting with a virus.
But you are, doctor, because you're telling your own cells to create the spike protein.
And that's not a virus. That's a component of the virus.
The spike protein is what makes the virus bad.
Okay. Hey, we're going to have to go to a break. We can have this discussion at a later date. I got to get to Eric because I want to talk about inflation numbers. I think you're a little mixed up on the difference.
I think I can get you otherwise. All right.
You have cellular machinery. And a virus uses your own cellular machinery, healthy cells, to reproduce itself. It doesn't have the machinery to reproduce itself. And the mRNA gives a little snippet of the program. It's like printing one page out of a whole document. That's in fact what your thing
is. The fact is that the vaccine tells your body, healthy cells, to create a dangerous spike protein. That's a fact.
All righty. I'm not so sure it's a dangerous spike protein. Any more dangerous than if you have replication of millions of virus particles with, guess what, spike proteins all over them. Hey, thanks for the call, though. It's a good discussion.
Okay,
appreciate it.
All right.
And hope you learned a little bit there. Okay, good. We'll have to have a little virology 101 course someday, Leah. Maybe that'll put people to sleep for about an hour. We can do that. Coming up, Eric Robert to talk about a little spike in the inflationary numbers. How's that? Ooh, a little segue there. Spike in the inflation numbers with Eric Robert when we come back here on the Randy Tolbert Show.
It's easy as 1, 2, 3. As simple as do, re, mi, A, B, C. 1, 2, 3, baby.
Welcome back to the Randy Tolbert Show, 729. We ran a little late there. I had a big discussion with the caller about virology. And now we're going to have a discussion about prices spiking. No protein, but prices spiking and what this all means and how did we get here and how are we going to get out of it? And, oh, it's terrible. With Eric Robert, good friend of mine and a friend of yours, of course, who along with our good friend Bob Stockdale hosts the Stiefel on the Money radio show. How you doing, Eric? Good morning.
I'm doing great, Randy. Thanks for having me today.
So I think it was probably the split screen of the week, wasn't it, Eric, when we saw at the same time that they were having James Taylor and having a celebration of the Inflation Reduction Act and at the same time that the market was tanking on news that the CPI was really abysmal and year over year, 8.3%, moderated only by fuel prices down a little bit. It seemed like this was a bit of a surprise to people that analyze these things. Were you surprised? I mean, is it based on your knowledge of history and where things are and how we got here? Was it a big surprise to you?
No, the data itself was not a big surprise. And I don't think it was really as big of a surprise as it may seem based on the market reaction. I will say this, Randy, I will never be able to listen to Fire and Rain without linking it now to the economic impact of these this inflation. It just isn't going to hit the same in the future.
I know, a song about suicide as the market was crashing. Wasn't that great? I love it.
I know, it wasn't exactly a pick-me-up song to begin with, and it seemed a little off on the tone. But so let's look at this week's Consumer Price Index report. That was the biggest data point that caused the market reaction and really leading to what the Fed's going to do. CPI came in at a 0.1% month-over-month increase between July and August. Expectations were for a 0.1% decline. So that's not a big difference in the scheme of things. If you just go back to June, CPI came in at a 1.2% month over month increase. That's where we saw inflation peak, at least so far. The problem with this particular reading, and this happens a lot with economic data, it's not necessarily how much the data point missed by, it's how much the market's expectations had shifted relative to what folks thought were happening. And in this case, for some reason, a lot of investors had convinced themselves, despite the fact that Jerome Powell, other Fed presidents like Bullard here in St. Louis and Mester in Cleveland had come out and been very clear that we are by no means done. Jerome Powell a couple weeks ago at Jackson Hole even used the words, there will be pain. Like when you have a Fed chairman saying there will be pain, that's not a subtle signal. And so whenever the CPI number came in at a 0.1% month-over-month increase, that honestly isn't a terrible monthly number relative to what we've seen earlier this year. It just missed expectations and pretty much assured the market that the Fed is going to do a 75 basis point hike again this coming week on Wednesday. And it dramatically shifted the market's expectations for what the Fed might do in the coming months.
Now, wasn't that number potentially, sort of moderated because of the decline in fuel prices, though? I mean, that was the overall CPI number, if I'm not mistaken. And if you took the core CPA, taking out volatile food and energy, it actually was a still pretty impressive trend, no?
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. So the headline number includes energy prices, includes food prices. I always chuckle a little bit whenever we talk about core CPI because as just a consumer and a parent and someone running a household, I wish I could exclude food and energy prices from my inflation sometimes. It doesn't seem to work that way. That being said, core CPI was much hotter than we'd like to see. It came in at 0.6% on a month-over-month basis, still fell on an annual basis, though. Here's the thing you have to understand about core CPI, though. It's not completely immune to food and energy prices, especially energy prices eventually basically matriculate through all other prices, or at least all other prices that involve transporting goods, which is a lot of them. So core CPI tends to lag the headline CPI a little bit for that reason when you have fluctuating energy prices like this. It's all higher than we want, though, and that's really the punchline here. It doesn't matter if it was 0.3% or 0.6%. All of those are more than we want to see for inflation numbers right now, and the Fed is incredibly clear. They will keep increasing rates until they see inflation abate on a durable path. And I don't think that's the wrong answer here, at least if you're the Federal Reserve. There are some other things we could be doing through Congress and just generally through policy that would help a lot. But if you're the Fed, no one else is showing up to the dance to help on these things. So they've got to use the only tool they have.
Well, that begs a couple of questions. Well, let's do the Fed question first. It seems as though there's general consensus, Eric Robert, that the Fed failed to act quickly enough as inflation was heating up after Biden's acknowledgement, you know, basically in the spring of last year of 21, when things were emerging from pandemic, by all reports, the economy was recovering and they kept rates incredibly low. Okay. And so then now it seems as though their reactions are late and overreacting. And then in that context, what's the possibility that they would overreact and raise rates way too high and cause a magnum recession, dare I say depression, by sort of this overreacting and having these convulsions of way too high of rates and way too low of rates? You know what I'm getting at here?
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're hitting the nail on the head, Randy. Okay, nobody that I know is making the argument that the Federal Reserve and short-term interest rates are the best policy that we have to try and pursue a quote soft landing here. If you look at the history of bull markets, there's a saying in our industry that bull markets don't die of old age; they're murdered by policy errors. In this case, in a few months, we might be saying, kind of like the game Clue, it was the chairman in the Federal Reserve with the punch bowl label that murdered the bull market. it's pretty much a foregone conclusion, as far as I'm concerned, that the Fed is likely going to increase rates. Actually, by design, they'll increase rates more than the economy can withstand, because that's how they kill inflation. The question is how much more and what sort of impact does that have on stock prices, bond prices, and so forth. The market's already priced a lot of this in. That's why we've had a difficult year for equities overall. Here's the thing. You don't want inflation to become entrenched in the economy. You don't want consumer inflation expectations to start pushing up into the 4%, 5%, and 6% range, because that's whenever you reach a more pernicious situation, similar to what we saw in the 70s, where it wasn't just a matter of inflation being high as a day-to-day issue. It was an issue that consumers wouldn't hold on to cash because they expected inflation to remain high. Fortunately, that's not the case now, and the Fed's trying very hard to prevent that from being the case.
Okay, you mentioned some other policy things that could be done if there was the will. What would that way be, other than Fed policy?
It's going to seem so maybe a little trite, Randy. How about stop spending money we don't have? If inflation at its core is too much money chasing too few goods, deficit spending and essentially printing money via the U.S. Congress and the Treasury is not typically a great way to stop inflation. Also, by removing impediments to the labor market. So there's still quite, the labor market participation rate has been consistently lower than it was prior to the pandemic. And that's because we've put in a number of social programs that have kept people out of work. We've got to stop that. And those are the sort of things that will help abate inflation. I'm not holding my breath for those things to happen. Neither's the Fed, for the record. That's why the Fed's increasing rates as they are.
Wow. It just seems like this is a no-win situation for a number of reasons, as you very, very articulately explained, and it's a shame. What are you going to be talking about on today's show?
Oh, we've got a lot of great stuff on today's show. We are going to talk about, investors need to understand how to position your portfolio in this sort of environment. It's hard to look forward at the next 6 months and the next year and see, why would I be positive on the economy? Why would I be positive on equities? But when you look at the history of how markets have traded through these tightening cycles, it's not a reason to be completely bearish whenever it comes to your own investments, but how you invest and where you invest matters a lot. It just matters a lot more than in a nice, easy bull market. So we're going to talk about that. We also, Randy, I think this one's important for you. Did you hear about this urologist down in Austin, Texas, that had one of these new Rivian electric trucks, and he actually powered a vasectomy off of his
Yes,
truck.
I did. I heard about that. He powered a vasectomy with an electric truck. Yeah, yeah, the lights so went out, right? There was a power failure in the office, and he was doing a vasectomy. Yeah.
I can't imagine being either the doctor or the patient that agreed to this, but we like to lighten things up in the fourth segment. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, as well as the unclaimed $1.3 billion Mega Millions ticket that's still floating out there, and it's coming up on a deadline if they don't claim it real soon.
Yeah, I don't know. The whole thought of a urologist, an electricity, and a vasectomy is just not a good visual. I don't know.
I just can't imagine the length of the waiver that that guy had to sign or should have signed.
The charging cables, like, clear, you know. Hey, Eric, always great when you join us. Looking forward to the show right after the Randy Tobler Show here on News Talk STL. Thanks, my friend. Appreciate it. Eric Robert, there he is, who, along with Bob Stockdale, hosts On the Money here on News Talk STL, 9 o'clock every Saturday morning. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, talk to Virginia Cruda from the Daily Wire and see what is going on in her world. I know she's been doing a lot of writing, and we'll cover some of those stories. I don't know. Hopefully, we can pull her away from her watching of the Queen's funeral. My gosh, I hope we can do that, Leah. Let's see if we can get her on the phone. Randy Tobler with you. Thanks for being here. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the program as we roll along here on the Randy Tobler Show. Always fun when we get together with Virginia Cruda. You can read her work at the Daily Wire and on Twitter, very active on Twitter, at VA Cruda. How you doing, Virginia? Thanks for being with me.
I'm good. I'm up early this morning getting ready to go out to a cross-country meet for my daughter, so I'm already moving today.
Well, okay, that's a good way to get into one of the questions I had for you. Being a mom of young children, involved with other families, and you know, in contact, and you know, networking, and listening to the talk around the field and in the bleachers, you know, when you're watching your kids at work, and maybe if you're manning the concession stand, you know, we all have to do that when we're at the various things. What's the word about inflation? Is it really something that people aren't talking about? I mean, it seems to be the buzz, of course, in the media. We're all talking about it, writing about it. I'm hearing about it on interviews. What's the word in your world?
Well, there are still complaints about gas prices because people actually remember, you'd be shocked, that the gas prices were going up before Putin invaded Ukraine. I don't know if anybody was aware of this. Because we were told that it was Putin's price hike and that he was responsible for all of it. But there are a few people who noticed that it had gone up like almost double before Putin even invaded in February. And that now that it's, you know, gone down as, you know, faster than it's ever gone down in history, the gas prices have, they still haven't gotten back down to where they were when Joe Biden took office.
Right, right. And but I think too, I mean, when you look at the cost of the kinds of things that appear on the dinner, breakfast, lunch table of young families, I mean, you know, eggs, bread, milk, cheese, you know, the staples of life, it just seems, I was telling folks earlier, I hadn't been to the market in a little while. My wife usually does the shopping. She asked me to stop by and pick up a few things. And I mean, it was jaw-droppingly amazing. It had been a couple months since I'd been in the market, and I thought, my goodness, the cost of staples has just gone crazy. That has altering discretionary spending for folks, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I for myself and I'm sure for others, because I notice, you know, in my house we eat a lot of eggs. So we you know, we do scrambled eggs, we do French toast, we do fried egg sandwiches. My kids will eat breakfast food for any meal of the day. And so it's one of those things, and usually that was cheap. You know, you could go to Aldi and you could get a dozen eggs for 68 cents, or, you know, even at Walmart, it was, you know, under $2 for 18, for, you know, the dozen and a half. And I can remember, now some of this was inflation and some of it was there was a bird flu epidemic and they had to cull a bunch of chickens. But it was $4.50 for 18 eggs within the last 3 months.
My Lord.
No, it's come back down a little bit because they've been able to kind of mitigate the bird flu issues. So it's down, now it's about three something, I think. Within the last year, it was $1.88. That's how much it's come up. And milk, same thing. You know, there were times even a year ago where you could get a gallon of milk for under $2 if you went to the right place. Like if you went to Aldi or you went to Walmart neighborhood market or wherever you were going, you could get a gallon of milk for under $2. And now it's $3. So, you know, they talk about inflation. Oh, it's 8.9%. Well, no. If you're buying milk and eggs, it's 50%.
Yes, yes. That's the myth. Yeah.
So it really depends on what you're buying. Maybe across the board inflation is 8%. Across the board inflation is 7.9% or whatever that number is. But unless you're buying the things that make it that percentage, you're paying a lot more than you did last year for the things that you need.
But the big $60,000 question is, are people going to be more worked up and likely to go and vote for people, namely Republicans, that get more credit for the economy or being able to manage the economy? Are they going to be more worked up on the other side of the fence and in reaction to the Dobbs decision? And, you know, on the other side, vote for those social issues like abortion rights, which apparently, according to the polls, it's driving voter registration among women in all polling that I've seen. Which of those two issues you think is going to prevail? Do you have an idea?
It's going to depend on memory, and it's going to depend on the people who go to the polls. So, you know, we joke about it in politics all the time. Voters have really, really horrible memories. They can remember what happened yesterday, but they have no idea what happened last year. So that's why things like Putin's price hike, if you say it enough times, actually works on a percentage of the population because they don't remember gas prices being under $2 a gallon. Mm-hmm. All they remember is the giant spike that just happened. And so if you give it a tagline and you remind them of it constantly, then that's why they remember things like that. It depends on the memory. It depends on who goes to vote and whether or not they remember how things were before Biden took office. That's number one. And number two, it depends on which demographics are going to vote. Because you notice the Dobbs decision and the student debt forgiveness, those are aimed at a very specific demographic, and that is the under 30, young, just graduated, trying to get themselves afloat kind of voters. Mm-hmm. Now, they are the least likely to vote, number one. Mm-hmm. If you look statistically, they're least likely to vote. But they are also least likely to have paid bills, run a household, bought groceries on a regular basis. And so they are more likely to be swayed by something like, well, you can't kill your baby later if you need to.
I think a 40-year-old woman who
has three kids is not worried about whether or not she can get an abortion. She's worried about whether or not she can feed the kids she already has. And if she's
so what we're hearing
vote,
is a vocal,
not,
we're hearing a vocal, passionate group that maybe doesn't represent everyday Americans is what you're saying.
Exactly. And the question is whether or not this is enough to make them go out and vote in percentages that they haven't in the past.
Yeah. I find it troubling, menacing that that's such a hot topic and such a driver of such passion among the American electorate. I mean, culturally, it just bothers me from a moral perspective that I'm not saying that there shouldn't be a debate about the issue. That's fine. But that it's so strong and so vitriolic from the pro-abortion side. It just, I mean, what is the God in heaven thinking when he looks down at our culture? I don't know. But
where is our country going that we have this many people who are this desperate to kill babies?
Yeah, Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah, you say it very plainly, and that's exactly what it is. Yeah, it's not a matter. Let's not call it choice or this or that. It's like, wow, I can't. I'll do anything. This is the number one, two, and three priority for me because I've got to make sure and preserve my and other women's rights to kill their babies. I'm like, oh my God, please. When you get to the pearly gates, please deny that you ever said that. Right? I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah,
on another note, we only have a few minutes left here, but I wanted to get your thoughts on what appears to be a dragnet by the Department of Justice, and most lately with Mr. Pillow guy, Mike Lindell, going after his cell phone at the Hardee's drive-thru. And we don't know the facts of the case. We don't know what drove that subpoena. But what are your thoughts about this? I mean, is this just another example of weaponizing the DOJ, or do you think there might be something there?
You know, I think that if we were watching an episode of Keystone Cops, what would be happening that was different? I mean, it's getting to be almost a joke, even to the people who think that there's something there. It's the way that this is playing out is, like, if there was really something there, do we not believe that it would have leaked already?
Yeah.
I mean, that's my thought. That look at how much stuff leaked up to this point. And, like, all of a sudden, now they've got it buttoned down? No, this is not. If there was something there, there would be something leaking already. Because there is... It's just, I don't see it being possible that they wouldn't have leaked something at this point.
Well, you know, I was talking with Zach Smith from Heritage earlier in the week, and he said, you know, it could be that they're looking for, you know, was he part of some kind of a scheme, or allegedly some part of a scheme to actually get in and manipulate the votes, even though we're claiming that there were other people manipulating the votes. You know, I mean, you never know. And until the facts are out, if we can ever discern what those really are, I don't want to jump to a conclusion. I mean, but my goodness, it just seems like there's just an overreach every time there's Democrats, whether it's Obama and Lois Lerner and the IRS, or in this case, Merrick Garland and the DOJ, and just a persecutory atmosphere. And it's very, very troubling to me.
Yeah, you know, and that's interesting. We've talked about this a few times on a couple of different shows about and there are a number of Republicans who want to do this in the opposite direction as soon as Republicans take control. And I've warned against this, you know, a number of times. Like, it's one thing to say, hey, there is something here and we need to investigate it. And it's another thing to say, well, they investigated us, so we need to investigate all of them.
Right.
And to me, that second path takes you where the French Revolution led. And there's a reason the French Revolution failed while the American Revolution didn't. And there's a reason why Abraham Lincoln pardoned all of the Confederates. You know, there's because at some point you have to be united, and you can't be if it's just whichever side is in power investigates the other side.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. We need to, at some point, break the chain. We just need to break the chain. And at this point, who's going to blink first? That's what I guess it's going to come down to. Well, at any rate, hey, my time's up, and my voice has just taken a little bit of a nosedive here. Leah's breaking up. But I had a little coffee go down the wrong pipe, but that's okay. I think we'll get it back together. Hey, it's always great to talk with you, Virginia, and I hope folks will log on to the Daily Wire and learn more about the things you're writing. Great story there on Stacey Abrams and her flip-flopping on, I never said that about denying that I was the loser in that race, the governor race.
I'm not delusional.
Right. She's not delusional. Right. Uh-huh. That's what all crazy people say. Hey, thanks, Virginia. Great, great time.
Absolutely.
Have a great weekend. When we come back, Professor Kurt Jefferson, Ukraine, China, Russia. Don't miss it.